From the shores of Puget Sound, this is the Healthy Homecast. Healthy Homecast is created and operated by Healthy Painting and HealthyPainting.com. Healthy Homecast is your source for information, news, and events that focus on environmental responsibility, environmental consciousness, and eco-related products and practices. And now your host, Daryl Whalen.
Okay, good afternoon and welcome to the Healthy Homecast. I'm Daryl Whalen. Welcome to episode 3 of our podcast. We're here with Tony Freese. Fryce. Okay. We can get into that later. Our engineer, news, events, and information guy, and sometime co-host, as well as this episode's special guest who we'll meet in a moment. Let's get started by hearing about some healthy news events that are coming up in the Puget Sound area. Take it away, Tony.
All right, and thank you, Daryl. And now for the news. First item up is the Northwest Eco Building Guild presents Puget Sound Green Tours for one spectacular weekend, Saturday and Sunday, April 16th and 17th from 10 to 4 p.m. First tour up is the South Sound Green Tour. South Sound Chapter will be hosting their second annual Green Tour, featuring a variety of deep green projects and workshops to help participants easily visualize solutions for their home business remodel projects. Second up is the Seattle Green Home Tour. This year, the Seattle chapter is joining in the fun with a green home tour, featuring tour sites in and around Seattle King and Snohomish counties. Find inspiration, education, and solutions emphasizing energy efficiency, water conservation, eco-friendly finishes and materials, comfort and quality. Design and construction professionals will also be on hand to answer all your questions. You can find more information at www.ecobuilding.org. Second item up is Seattle Area Built Green presents Green Real Estate Specialist GRES Designation Seminar. This is taking place on March 3rd and 4th at South Seattle Community College. This Green Real Estate Specialist two-day in-depth green training covers site design, energy, water materials, indoor environmental quality, maintenance and operations, green and energy efficient mortgages, the greening of multiple listing service, green appraisal standards, marketing, branding green, and tips on greening your business. A lot of greening in this. Exceptional information is provided for real estate agents who define green and its implications of home sales. Attendees will earn the National Green Real Estate Specialist designation. Register at www.porterworks.com educational solutions page. You can find more information on Built Green News and the current newsletter at www.builtgreen.net. Next up is the Northwest American Lung Association 2011 Fight for Air Run and Walk. And this will be taking place May 1st at Magnuson Park. Find more information at www.alaw.org. Next is Seattle Green Drinks presents The Carbon Landscape and Basics of GHG Accounting. This takes place Wednesday, March 9th, 2011, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. This one-day workshop discusses the greenhouse gas landscape and how to create a greenhouse gas inventory. We will answer those burning questions. What is greenhouse gas and why does it affect me? You can find more information at www.seattlegreendrinks.org. Next up is People for Puget Sound presents the Elliott Bay Pier Exploration, March 16th, 2011, from 7:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Have you seen the marine creatures that live in the dark night waters of Puget Sound? Join us to find out what lives just beyond our visual view. This unique opportunity to peer out the exciting nightlife off the pier at Elliott Bay Marina. Come see what marine creatures can attract by putting lights into the water off the pier. We will look for sea stars, nudibranches, mussels, fish, shrimp, and crabs. You can find more information on the events page at www.pugetsound.org. Next up is Environmental Science Center in Burien presents Save the Sound, Build a Rain Garden Workshop at the Burien Library. This takes place March 15th, 2011 from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Environmental Science Center. They will be working with stewardship partners to install free rain gardens in Burien neighborhoods. This free workshop will teach you more about rain gardens and the upcoming program to help install some. More information can be found at www.envsciencecenter.org. Second to last, we got a lot of news today, is EcoHouse presents the American Clay Workshop. This is coming up on Saturday, April 16th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the EcoHouse Seattle. Join us for a hands-on workshop on American clay. We will walk through the whole process of applying this natural earth plaster and give you a chance to try it out for yourself. More information can be found at www.ecohouse.com. And last but not least is Natural Awakenings of Seattle, presenting a class beginning this spring. A new Healthy Living, Healthy Planet magazine will feature articles and resources to support holistic and sustainable lifestyles. You can find the information on the homepage at www.seattleawakenings.com. All this information can be found on the Healthy Homecast website at blogspot.healthyhomecast.com. And now back to Daryl.
Great, and we're back. Great job, and thanks for that, Tony, and please check out those things. We'll get those up on our post on our website, along with all the appropriate links. So the intention of this homecast is to hear the stories of people from a variety of places and find out what kind of healthier and greener lives that they're living and how that came to be. This time around, we have our first international guest, who happens to be a friend of mine from Chicago. He's a great guy and has a very interesting life. How about if you start out by telling us your name, the type of work you do, and what is it that has you passing through Seattle?
Well, my name is Frank Mosseri, and I run an independent record label in Chicago. The name of the label is Smog Veil Records. And we're a green and sustainable record label, been in business for nearly 20 years now. And we're coming through to Chicago with a book tour, the Cleveland Confidential Book Tour, which is three authors, originally from Cleveland, Bob Pfeiffer, Mike Hudson, and Cheetah Chrome.
Great, and we'll have links for that up on the site to talk about getting the books and a little bit about the tour schedule and all the other stuff that Frank puts out on the label. So we basically have a standard list of questions to our guests. So to start out, maybe we'll talk about the record company just for a little bit first and go into the other, the greener aspect of your life. How did you learn this work, and can you share one or more events that influenced you to adopt this into your life?
Well, the label wasn't always green and sustainable. We released records and CDs in a manner that was sort of traditional in the industry. Lots of plastic, lots of paper, nothing with any sort of high recycled content. Actually, none of it had any recycled content in those products. And, you know, Daryl, you and I both grew up in the same sort of geographic area in northeastern Ohio, both on the east side of Cleveland. And one of the worst environmental disasters ever is essentially sitting just directly north of the city. And it's an amazing, what really could be an amazing jewel, Lake Erie, is really something that's sort of dank and smelly. And it you know, that was sort of always in the back of my mind, you know, wow, what could that be? You know, what are the possibilities? What's out there if people just take a moment to think about it and do things in sort of a cleaner, more sustainable manner? And so we adopted almost 10 years ago now, adopted some principles in the business that would make it green and sustainable, those being, among other things, using recycled content papers, using less paper, especially in our PR and advertising campaigns, getting rid of plastics in our releases, so we don't use jewel cases anymore, for example. Instead, we use all paperboard packaging, which is all recycled paper. Actually, the records, we still do records. The records that we do are pressed from regrind vinyl instead of virgin vinyl. We've even we haven't really completed this project yet, but we've been encouraging the biggest pressing plant in the country in Nashville to adopt some bioplastics within their line of records that they offer. They're testing it. They haven't gotten to the point yet of being able to offer that as a retail item, but it's being tested.
That's amazing. You know, I've known you for years, and when I was going to talk to you about doing this thing, I hadn't even any idea. I know about your house a little bit that we'll talk about, but I wasn't so aware. That's really exciting. Thanks for taking that on and for doing that, and certainly with sharing with that us with that. Simple question: do you enjoy the work of the record company and the record label, and as well as about the aspect of implementing the green part of it to it?
Well, the thing about running an independent record label is that it's not really a flashy thing. The way it's, you know, I don't want to romanticize it. There's not rock and roll stars hanging out in our office all day. It's really sort of like 8 hours of rock and roll paperwork, you know. But the cool thing about it is that the label is focused on music from northeastern Ohio, so I get to work with people that I knew from the past, and really all my friends and new friends, and to that extent, it's a lot of fun. It's really enjoyable. But yeah, our office is based in Chicago. I don't live in Cleveland anymore, but it's a LEED certified building, and it's an old corner store that we remodeled, and it has a lot of innovative green features in it, and it's really cool.
Cool. Yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit as we go along here. This is Healthy Homecast, so tell us about some of the healthier, safer, more environmental things that you've learned in life and have taken on for yourself and your family. I know Frank's awesome wife, Lisa, is going to be flying into town here pretty soon.
Yeah, she joins the tour today. For the business, we looked at implementing some of these principles, and we thought, well, you know, it's very easy to do. It's very easy to use nowadays recycled content paper. It wasn't so easy to do records in a green manner, but we've gotten to that point now. Some of the records we've done now sort of meet these new EU standards for vinyl, so they have much fewer volatile chemicals in them, which is kind of cool. But for the business, too, we wanted to see if it would have sort of an economic impact upon the business. Would it require us to spend more money? Would we save money? Would we make more money? And the answers to those questions became self-evident. Obviously, we're going to spend less money if we don't have to use a lot of paper in our PR and advertising campaigns. The prices for the packaging that solutions that we've come up with are equal to the jewel case pricing, so we didn't have to pay more for that. The records, too, we can press them in a green manner, and there's no additional price to us. So overall, we can spend less money, and on our products, we don't have to spend any more money to do it. And so at the end of the day, you know, it should be more profitable, and it is.
That's really cool. And what about in your life outside of the record business?
Well,
the glamorous record business.
Yeah, I mean, one other thing that we do as well is advocate on these issues. It's more than just pressing records in a green, sustainable manner. It's advocating these issues to others. So, you know, Lisa and I have spoken at a number of panels, including South by Southwest, and on podcasts just like this, interviews, magazine articles about these issues, just encouraging people to, hey, just take a look at what you're doing and see if you can adopt some of these principles. By the way, a number of them can be done basically for free. You know, for example, you can plant a garden. That's one of the most green and sustainable things you can do, is just plant a garden. And it's amazing to find out, again, what tomatoes taste like or what strawberries taste like instead of buying them at the grocery store. And it's kind of a cool thing. It actually will save you money.
Can't get any more local than that, your own backyard, right?
Yeah, no. Another thing, too, is that people should understand that really only about one-third of everyone in the United States recycles. And, you know, if we can get that number to, say, 40%, which wouldn't be that many more people, that would be a huge, huge increase in the things that are going in the recycle bin and not going into a landfill. So, you know, those are things you can do. It's not going to cost you any money to do it, but you can definitely improve your life and improve the lives of other people.
It's amazing. We talked about that on our other podcast, about how actually quite simple it is to make a difference, and it doesn't take much to certainly make a start. Let's see. So when I was putting together the original thoughts about this home podcast and the type of guests we have, I thought about Frank first because he seems to be a beautiful and responsible person. I'm finding out more in the last few minutes than I even really knew.
I don't know about the beautiful part. I think
you're a beautiful person, even though you advocate that crazy punk rock. But you know the most blatantly obvious thing was the thing about the house. Because that was like the thing that we talked about, and so why don't you tell us a little bit more about your home, where it's at, what kind of house it is, and what makes it special and unique?
Well, understand too about the house that you know there's really a lot of things within the house that really aren't specific, and it is our office as well. There's a lot of things in that building that aren't really specific to a record label, but are certainly green and sustainable. It's an old corner store. Situated in the Bucktown neighborhood in Chicago, about 3 miles northwest of downtown. We found the building, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago when we decided to move back to the Midwest. And it was a three-unit apartment building at the time, but it was a perfect size for an office and for a living space. And we decided, hey, why don't we take on this project? We can really make it look great. And do some fantastic things in there, but get it LEED certified, and incorporate some green technologies in there. Some of which have never really been used in combination before in the United States. So, for example, there's a lot of things there that are obvious. So, for example, we have 30 solar panels sitting on the roof, and those generate upwards of 40% of all the electricity that we need for the building. And understand too that the building is almost entirely all electric. There's only really three natural gas needs in the entire building, and those are the hot water tank, the cooktop, and a grill that I have on the roof. And so, for example, even with heating and cooling being all electric, we've had electric bills in the month of December in Chicago, which can provide, you know, present some challenges in heating a building.
$400 a month?
$35.
Oh my
for
God.
December is our record. And I've never had a gas bill more than $35. So we're talking, it's a pretty large building too. So we're talking 1,900 square feet
per amazing.
Floor. And there's a basement, first floor office, and second floor living space, and $35 paid for all the – that's my record, paid for all the fuel to operate that building.
That's amazing.
We dug geothermal wells in the basement because this is a typical Chicago townhouse, row house, so there's no yard. So we wanted to have geothermal heating and cooling, so we just dug the wells in the basement. We dug 15 wells. They're each 60 feet deep. We keep a fluid stored in those wells. The ground keeps that fluid at 55 degrees. To make air conditioning, all we do is blow air over that fluid. To make heating, we pump that fluid out of the ground into an electric-fired boiler, heat that up to 100 degrees, and then just circulate it through the floor of the house. And that makes heating. The drywall, there's a lot of things, too, that aren't obvious. Like the drywall in the house has a high fly ash content. It was made really just around the corner from Chicago in northern Indiana. The paint is special low VOC paint. The flooring, we did kind of this cool thing with the flooring. We run a record label, so we had a large inventory of vinyl records that sold really well 10 or 15 years ago, but don't sell so well anymore. So we could have like just thrown those in the garbage or in the recycle bin, but instead we ground them up into little particles and mix them with a sort of a epoxy concrete material for the flooring, and then just poured it out on the floor and polished it. So we have all these like tiny little vinyl record specs, and they're not black. They're they're different colors. Some are clear, red, white.
Colored vinyl and stuff.
Yeah, colored vinyl.
Cool.
So even our friends, the Dissidents, records are going to live forever because we took a couple of the records of theirs that we had in inventory, ground them up, and they're in the floor.
Yeah, that's really cool. So let's see. Can you talk about a little bit about who did the remodel and how the remodel was done?
Well, my wife and I were the general contractors on it, And so we've done a couple other remodel projects before, so we kind of knew how to do the general contractor thing. But we had an architect help us with the plans and with the scheduling and finding the subs. It really wasn't too hard in Chicago to find subs to do green projects. It's a big city, so there are a lot of subs. But even the ones that really hadn't done green projects before, when we brought them on and explained to them what we're doing and how it sort of made sense versus traditional construction, it was an easy job to convince them, and it really didn't affect the pricing too much. So, you know, it was kind of a great experience for them and for us as well. And, yeah, it was a cool thing.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you're spreading the message around. That's just fantastic. I'm excited about this. So what was the basis for the decision, the initial decision to do all this? I mean, some of it's kind of obvious, like hearing you talk, but...
Well, we knew we wanted to institute these green and sustainable practices within the business. And as I said, it was really easy to do with the products that we release and the way we promote them. But we really wanted the office to be that way too, you know. And we sort of wanted the office to be sort of a standard within the industry that, you know, hey, any music business can do this. And it just really takes a little bit of thinking and working with your budget and seeing what you can do. But it's not really hard to do at all. And in fact, it's just as easy to do as traditional construction. But, you know, the thing about the music industry, too, is that it's supposed to have sort of creative, you know, people. So it was really a natural fit to try to institute green practices within the business, because we're supposed to be sitting around thinking up new ideas and coming up with new stuff. So it was just sort of natural that we ought to be taking the lead on doing these things, and it was, you know, it was a fun project that way. If you thought of it that way, it really was a fun project, definitely.
That's really, really cool, because I know personally about some of the music, or most of the music that you have on there, and when that stuff was really in its incubation period, that was pretty much the basis of all that stuff coming to be. It was like experimenting and thinking outside the box.
Absolutely.
Cool. That's really, really great. So you've already kind of mentioned how much of input did you have in the design. You said you did work with the designer, but how much of an input did you have in the design and construction of the whole thing?
Well, there were some technical elements that we didn't have a lot of input in, even though we met with the engineers and the people that were going to do some of the highly technical stuff, really to try to, you know, provide some input, but really to learn. But we were, you know, involved with the design. Really all the way from start to finish. And, you know, that was kind of a challenge too, because, you know, we really had to do some investigating here and there, trying to find materials that would work, that would be green. And, you know, it did take a little work, but it was definitely worth it. You know, like I said, the drywall, for example, the company that produces that drywall is one of the largest drywall manufacturers in the United States, but they don't even though this product has a much higher fly ash content than any other drywall they produce anywhere in the country, they don't advertise it as being a green product, which is kind of silly to me. You just have to know what the product number is, where you can find it, and what the cost is. But it's, you know, it's that kind of investigating that was kind of cool to me anyways, because the record label does a lot of reissue work and retrospective work, and that's detective work anyways. So, yeah, this is kind of cool.
That's really great. So you say, one thing I wasn't sure you mentioned, the house was built originally in what year?
1897. It was built in the 1890s. It was actually a tavern to begin with. There was a tavern in the basement and a tavern on the second floor, and the people lived on the first floor of the house. And it was actually, it was at a time when in Chicago when the basement of this particular structure was actually the ground floor of the building, and then in the early 1900s, Chicago decided to add sewers to that neighborhood. So instead of burying the sewers, they just laid them on top of the street and then buried the sewer itself, raising the street level up to what was then the second floor of the house, but which is now the first floor of the house. So if you go down to the basement, you can see the old door jams and stuff. They're all still there, and so that was kind of cool to put it back into that use, and it operated. It operated as a tavern until the 70s.
Wow.
And the same family operated it since the 40s for 30 years. And we actually got in touch with those people because they live in the northern suburbs of Chicago. We got in touch with them, invited them over to the house, showed them what we did, and they were just amazed.
That's really
and
cool.
They told us some great stories about how they, you know, where they used to play, you know, in the tavern after hours and stuff. So,
was there ever like a speakeasy? Wasn't there like a prohibition?
Yeah, there was prohibition era there where it was predominantly a Polish neighborhood, class Polish neighborhood. So
taverns.
Yeah, which you and I kind of know in Cleveland, you know. So it kind of looks like, you know, that old sort of Cleveland brick building neighborhood, you know, where great, I think, people live. And it operated as a Polish tavern, yeah.
Cool. So I don't know if you know much about Seattle and stuff, but, like, the downtown. In fact, I don't know as much as somebody like Tony would know, but originally Seattle was, like, a town, and then they, like, had some issues, and they built the new town, like, right on top of the old town.
That's kind of
what you're saying a
little
bit.
That's not really in Chicago to some degree that happened because a large part of downtown is built on landfill.
But, so Seattle, isn't it?
Yeah. But the amazing thing about my neighborhood, as I said, is you know, when the city decided that they wanted sewers, they didn't bury them. They just laid the sewers on top of the street and then buried the old street and the new sewers and you know, raised the street level up to basically the second floor of people's houses. But, you know, that old tavern, after it stopped being a tavern, there was really no use for it. In the 70s, the building fell into disrepair. The neighborhood itself fell into disrepair. And the neighborhood now has been revived, some of which has been done sustainably. And I'm happy to report that on the street that I live on, there's some new, at least two new remodels that are being done for LEED certification. So it's pretty awesome. But you know, there's been some stuff too that hasn't been done sustainably, and you can kind of see that how that didn't make any sense to anyone, and you sort of have to scratch your head because there were some new, some great, fantastic old apartment buildings that were filled up with artists and musicians in our neighborhood, and developers came in, bought those buildings, could have remodeled them, and kept the rents low for all those artists and musicians, but didn't. They just tore the buildings down, built new buildings, which were not done in a green and sustainable manner. And as you know, the economy hasn't been doing great, and now those buildings are vacant, and all those artists moved away. And I can see that doing things green and sustainably makes a lot more sense, and then doing them in the old traditional manner doesn't make any sense. It can almost ruin a neighborhood. And so, you know, it's really important for us to get this message out because it not only can save you some money, make you sleep a little bit better at night, but it could continue to make your neighborhood healthy and vibrant.
Sweet. Well, we got a little bit of high sign from the producer here, Tony, that we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back to hear more from Frank.
Thank you.
You are listening to Healthy Homecast.
Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe.
Came to rest on the minefield, blessed with naive mind shield. Like a helmet, they would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue disillusion.
All right, and we're back. So let's see. Wow, there's a lot of stuff that's coming up, and we've had a chance to chat for a couple seconds there during the break, and it's I'm really so it's just exciting. I'm in a class right now with a guy that works with my company downtown, and It's about a lot of this stuff. So why don't you? I was curious about. Is there anything unique about the seeing that it was an existing building? Was there anything unique about the structural aspect?
Yeah, you know,
maybe a little bit before. You talked about the uniqueness before. With the what about afterwards?
Well, we had to do a fair amount of deconstruction in order to. Especially to beef up the roof a little bit, and also to reinforce some of the floors because, you know, this was a building that was more than 100 years old, and some of it had deteriorated to a great degree. But we salvaged all the roof trusses and floor joists that we had a demo, and stacked them up, milled them, and used them for stair treads, landings, wood landings throughout that. We made our own butcher block wood landings out of the old roof trusses.
Cool.
And actually all the demo materials went to a recycle yard as well. And we recycled about 91% of all the demo materials in the house. So only 9% of the demo materials went into a landfill. And for a construction project, that's a pretty significant number.
That's
because traditionally, in a remodel, 100% of the demoed materials are going into the landfill, and for us, we only did 9%. But we did a lot of experimenting there as well. And we did a lot of thinking as well about where the solar panels ought to go.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, the next question was talking about a little bit of the efficiency aspects. Why don't you talk about the solar and the solar panels and some of the unique aspects about that?
Well, we had to do some experimenting really with solar panels. We wanted to be sure that they were situated in the right spot on the roof so they wouldn't be shadowed out by surrounding buildings and trees. And I think that thinking really paid off because, as I said, especially in the summertime, we can generate a lot of electricity. Even in the wintertime, if there's not a lot of snow cover and it's sunny, we can generate electricity. Definitely enough to keep the building well heated and to use our computers and whatever we have to use to operate a business. But one other experiment there that maybe didn't work as well as I had planned, but still generated a lot of publicity for the building, for the business, and for green practices in general, are the wind turbines that we put on the roof. First of all, we advocated to the city council in Chicago to change the zoning code on height restrictions for wind turbines only, to allow people to put wind turbines on their roof in residential neighborhoods if they wanted to. And that took 3 months to do that advocating, but they finally agreed, and we were granted the first permit in the city of Chicago to do wind turbines. And you can see them from the street, and they look really cool. They have this like sort of like funky looking windmill on top of your house in the middle of Chicago. But the thing is, and we really didn't know this going in, what amount of wind we would have on a steady basis on the roof. We did some sort of experimenting with handheld wind metering devices, but that was really sort of an inaccurate measure. And unfortunately, the wind turbines don't generate as much electricity as we had planned, but on a typical summer day, we have people standing out there on the corner. There's a restaurant across the street from our building checking the things out, and I always kind of wonder, maybe they're thinking that they want to do some green stuff on their house. So, you know, even though the wind turbines don't generate as much electricity as we want, still people are checking it out, getting interested in this issue, maybe doing some stuff on their own.
And the positive, well, that's really cool. And obviously the positive aspects of the project are certainly make up for the tiny little bit that didn't work. Why don't you talk about a little bit about the ventilation, the overall ventilation and insulation of the building?
Yeah, that's really important too, because we have to be super efficient about our electricity use in a green building. It's very easy actually to bolt some solar panels onto the roof of a house or a structure and start generating electricity or making hot water. You can use solar panels to make hot water. We don't do that in our structure, although the city of Chicago, I don't know if this program still continues, but they did have a green hot water solar program where they were passing these things out for free. You can go down to City Hall, make an application, and get one of these things for free and put them on your roof. But we were really careful about how we closed up the building, how we insulated it, and how we ventilated it. So, and I think those efforts were successful. So in the summertime, our typical thermostat setting for the air conditioning is 78 degrees, and it took a little bit of experimenting to figure out what would be the most efficient setting. At 75, I have to tell you that we were freezing cold in the building in the middle of summer when it was 100 degrees out.
Wow.
So we just inched it up, and then 78 seems to be like the most comfortable setting. In the wintertime, 67, maybe 65 at night, And, you know, you can generally walk around in a T-shirt in wintertime in the building at 67 or 68. It feels comfortable. You know, I could crank it up more than that if I really wanted to. I don't really need to. It's perfect at that temperature, and it's great.
And Chicago and $35. I remember when I lived in Cleveland, we were having like $400 like gas bills and everything.
Oh yeah, I mean I experienced that as well. And to go from that to $35 in the wintertime is just unthinkable. But it is thinkable. It is possible, and definitely we do that.
That's great. So being that I'm a painting contractor, I'm gonna have to ask if there's anything unique about the paint products or the colors or the general interior design concepts that were used.
Well, there were some interior design elements that we put in the building definitely to reduce the amount of lighting that we would have to use every day. So the windows, we have a lot of windows, but we also placed them in areas where we knew that we were going to get a lot of sunlight. But and that helps on the electric bills as well. But the painting... we use the low VOC paint. It doesn't smell like latex paint, even when it's new. It doesn't off gas. You know, typically traditional paint, even though you can't smell it, it's off gassing. And if you're in the house and it's off gassing, you're breathing that stuff, whether you know it or not. And this stuff has low VOC, so it doesn't off gas to such a great degree. That stuff is readily available now everywhere. Actually, building codes require it now in most places. So we've gotten to the point now where what makes sense from an environmental standpoint also shows up in the legislation. And that says to me that we've really made a difference.
What about the color palette? Was there any thought around the color palette you guys chose for the
design? You know, actually, no, because... these paints are available in basically any Pantone color you can think of, so that really didn't dictate the choice. We went with lighter colors generally because lighter colors, it's much easier to reflect light with lighter colors, and we wanted that sort of light reflection just so we could, you know, reduce the amount of lighting that we had going on in the house. And but a homeowner can choose any color in a green paint. A green and sustainable paint that you can get in a traditional paint. You probably can't even find a traditional paint anymore in a lot of places anyway. So, but yeah.
Great. So I know you travel. You travel a fair amount in your work and in your life. And I was just wondering about the overall changes that you, the similar changes to what you're making in Chicago as well as outside of Chicago. How do you see things in general changing in the area, being greener or not?
Well, you know, there's a lot of communities throughout the country now that are adopting these principles right in their building codes. So if you want to do a new construction, if you want to do a remodel, you almost have to do it at a LEED certified level in order to get permitted. And in order to do that, you've got to use the right painters. You've got to use the right products. You've got to use the right drywall. But I'm happy to report that this won't add significantly to your bottom line. In fact, it might save you money in the long run.
And, of course, at this point, the value is...
The value is there as well. I mean, yeah. We're in an economy now that that is pretty difficult when it comes to keeping the value of your house at the right level. And people value having green constructions. People value having LEED certifications. People want to live in structures that they know aren't going to make them sick. So this is definitely a thing that people should be interested in and definitely are interested in.
Do you have any indication or any thoughts about the work that you've done with your home having any type of influence or inspiration or effect on your actual neighborhood?
Well, as I said, an important thing that we do within our business is advocate these green issues. And I mentioned before that there are some new constructions in the neighborhood that are LEED certified. The city of Chicago has its own green construction certification program, which we participated in. We were certified underneath that program. It's kind of cool the way they do it. You make an application, they review the plans. If you're accepted, they give you this really cool placard that you sort of bolt to the front of your building while the construction's going on.
Cool.
So everyone knows about it. They also, which is kind of cool, pass out money grants that you don't have to pay back. It's not a loan, it's a grant. And if you have the right project, they will pay you, for example, to put a green roof on your building. They paid me to do that, which is kind of cool because my building has no yard. So we wanted to have a yard. The roof became the yard. That's not cheap to do. But if the city is going to give you money to do it, you know, it can be cheap to do. The solar panels, the state of Illinois has a grant program. I'm not sure if that's going to continue because of the economic condition in the state. But when my check showed up for my solar panels from the state of Illinois, I was shocked. I had no faith that that check was ever going to show up. But we made the application, got it in on time. And it's kind of great that the state really values these kind of projects, and the city kind of values these projects, and you know, really stands behind it with money. Not only with encouraging people to do it by patting them on the back, but passing out checks left and right in order so that people can do this stuff.
And of course, they're making sure that it's being done properly and
absolutely,
and efficiently and professionally, and otherwise, that you probably have some kind of repercussions.
Yeah, you know, there's also tax credits available there too. So. If you don't have a project that you're going to put solar panels on, and you might not, you know, qualify for programs like that, if you're doing new windows, if you're making improvements to the appliances within the structure, if you're making improvements to the heating and air conditioning systems within the structure, you can get tax credits for that. So you might not get a check, but you'll get a nice tax deduction for doing that stuff.
Great. So this is a question for not necessarily directed towards all the stuff that we're talking about, but this is directed towards a conversation towards like the average layperson that doesn't know about all this stuff. What would you say that a healthy home means to you?
Well, what it means is living in a house that you didn't have to wreck the environment in order to build or remodel. And it also means living in a house that is a little cheaper to operate than a traditional house. And it also means living in a house that isn't harming you by off-gassing, or isn't harming your neighbors by off-gassing. One thing that's kind of cool about our house, if you take a look at it, there really aren't any vents like you see in a traditional house. So you don't have these like big natural gas exhaust flumes coming off the top of the house. There's a small one because we have a hot water tank that's fueled by natural gas, but that's it. There's no chimney, you know, that there's no pipes sticking out of the top of the house.
Cool. What does sustainability mean to you?
Sustainability probably means different things to different people, but to me, what it means is being to operate your business or operate your house in a manner that is less taxing upon the environment, is less taxing upon the infrastructure in the city that you live in, and is less taxing upon the people that you do business with.
Great. One of the questions that we ask about is, you know, having a healthy business myself, I really toy with the right kinds of language to use with people, and I chose healthy more so than green and eco, and I choose to kind of push environmental responsibility and environmental consciousness, but I'm not necessarily sure that lands with a lot of people the right way. What do you find is the best way to communicate this type of mindset and lifestyle and language with people?
Well, you know, I actually really like the word healthy being associated with this type of business, because that's really an important element that people don't think about in traditional houses, because, you know, you can't notice the odor of traditional paints in your house. You don't notice it, but it's there, and you're breathing it in every day. And you know, if you can convince people that, you know what, there's a different way to do this. There's a different product out there that won't make you sick over time. Why don't you check this product out, learn about it, become interested in it, and maybe incorporate it in your house? I think that's the message that needs to be told to people.
Great. Let's see. Do you know, this is getting a little more technical. This is maybe going away from like the layperson, but when might something not appear to be green on the surface yet actually provide a responsible purpose?
You know, that's a difficult question. But if you look at the house, if you look at the structure I live in, just for example, look at the drywall. I mean, it's everywhere you look. It's in every house that anyone lives in, or apartment, or wherever you live. To make that drywall, there had to be a mineral. To make traditional drywall, anyways, there had to be a mineral mined out of the ground. There had to be a factory spewing chemicals into the air to take that mineral and sort of bond it to a paper, cardboard, hybrid type of thing. There's formaldehyde that's used in that bonding process. There's formaldehyde in the paper. If you live in a structure that has that, you're going to be breathing that stuff in, whether you realize it or not. In a green structure, you probably don't even think twice about the drywall because you see it everywhere. But if you use a drywall that has been produced in a more green and sustainable manner, you're not going to be breathing in those chemicals. Just think about that incident that occurred a couple years ago with the drywall issues in remodels down in Florida, where it not only was making people sick, it was actually wrecking their house, destroying the systems that are within the walls. Yeah. You can just imagine what that's doing to your health if you have to live in a structure like that.
That was all over the country,
yeah,
too.
versus living in a structure that was remodeled using products that don't do that to you.
So do you know when might it be counterproductive to reuse or recycle something, or when when it might actually be better to buy something new than to actually reuse or recycle something?
Well, you have to look at the cost versus the benefit. There are a couple elements within a structure that cost really is gonna impact the total cost of the project to such a degree that maybe it's not worth it. So, windows, appliances, those big sort of big ticket items, you really have to weigh the cost versus the benefit. But as I said, on a lot of these things, there are tax benefits that might not be obvious to you when you're plunking down that dollar or credit card or check. But, if you think about it and if you look at it in the long run, those things seem to make more sense over the long run versus that very day you have to make that purchase. So, I really tell people to think about these things sort of in the longer view instead of the shorter view.
Great. Do you have any simple tips, just average tips where somebody can improve, even in a small way, green-wise, in their lives?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, there's probably 10 things that you can do that aren't going to cost you any money or will probably save you money over the long haul that you can do that are going to be green and sustainable. For example, plant a garden, number one. Number two, recycle. Number three, think about working from home for one day out of the week. Number four, carpool. Five, take public transportation to work one day out of the week. So think about it. If everyone in the United States drove to work 4 days a week instead of 5 days a week, just think about how much gas and oil we wouldn't have to use, how much exhaust wouldn't get thrown up into the environment. There's a bunch of other stuff too. You can easily come up with a list of 10. There's four or five right there that you can do that aren't going to cost you any money, are going to save you money in the long run.
Great. So those are just a couple more questions. Do you care to share what related groups and or organizations you support and or are affiliated with?
Yeah, there's a couple. If you're interested in remodeling or building a house and getting LEED certification, you should definitely get in touch with the LEED certifying people early on, even before you break ground or start tearing the building up, because they're going to give you some hints and tips for you to follow to make sure you get LEED certified. There's a number of other organizations out there too. Rock the Earth supports green music businesses, distributes information. There's a bunch out there. Just do a Google search and you'll find them.
And hopefully you can share some of the links with me and I'll put them up on the site too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Great. So do you have a website or phone number or Facebook or Twitter or blog that you'd like to people to check out?
We have a Facebook fan page. The cool thing about Smogvale is that the bands and artists that work for Smogvale do a lot of gigs throughout the year. We always have this like standing contest. If you're at a gig where a Smogvale band plays, take a picture with your picture phone, post it on our Facebook fan page, and we'll send you a neat gift.
Cool.
We have a regular website too, smogvale.com. We don't Twitter too much. I just haven't figured out how to do that. And I tend to be long-winded, so you know, I find it hard to be limited to 144 characters. But yeah, you can find us on the web. It's really
cool,
easy.
And we'll put all that information on our site. And then last question. Any last words or anything you feel was left out?
No, not at all. Just have fun. Think about what you're doing when you're doing these big projects, and smile. Do some jumpy jacks now and then to make yourself laugh, and that's my mantra, I think.
Well, listen, thank you so much. I feel really honored to be able to do this with you, and as long as I've known you, and we've had some association business-wise over the years, I had no idea to what level you're really taking on such great things. So good luck with the tour, and we'll be in touch, and have a great day.
Thanks, Daryl.
Thank you for listening to Healthy Homecast, brought to you by HealthyPainting.com. Please feel free to contact us with comments, questions, and suggestions for posting, event information, news, show topics, or guests for Healthy Homecast. Our number is 206-650-4587, or send a direct email to info@HealthyPainting.com. Like rain.